And while you're turning there, let me just remind those of you who are young people, this Friday night at 7:30 here, we have a youth gathering. We'd love to see you there. I'd love to tell you what was happening, but I don't know, so come along and find out. John chapter 1, and I'm going to read from verse 43. It says, the next day, Jesus decided to leave Galilee. Finding Philip, he said to him, follow me. Philip, like Andrew and Peter, was from the town of Bethsaida. Philip found Nathanael and told him, we have found the one Moses wrote about in the law and about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. Nazareth? Can anything good come from there? Asked Nathanael. Come and see, said Philip. When Jesus saw Nathanael approaching, he said of him, here truly is an Israelite in whom there is no deceit. How do you know me? Nathanael asked. Jesus answered, I saw you while you were still under the fig tree before Philip called you. Then Nathanael declared, Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. Jesus said, you believe because I told you I saw you under the fig tree. You will see greater things than that. He then added, very truly I tell you, you will see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man. Last week, I made some introduction to what we're going to try and look at over the next number of weeks. And my intention is to look at the Gospels so that we might see the glory of Christ. And that in that, beholding his glory, we might be changed from glory to glory. I won't do all of what I said last week. If you want to hear it, I'm sure it's available somewhere. And so we gave some consideration to John 1 and verse 14. We beheld his glory, the glory is of the one and only Son, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. And what follows after John's prologue in John chapter 1, verses 19 to 28, John the Baptist is interrogated by Jewish leaders. Verses 29 to 34, John the Baptist testifies that Jesus is God's chosen one. And verses 35 to 42, John the Baptist's disciple starts to follow Jesus. And then we get to this story. Jesus is on his way to Galilee when he sees Philip and says to Philip, come follow me. And Philip went and found Nathanael and has a very interesting version of events, considering Jesus came to him and said, come follow me. He says, we have found the one. Interesting. We have found the one Moses wrote about in the law and about whom the prophets also wrote. Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph. And Nathanael's not just uncertain that this might be true. He's almost entirely dismissive of it. Nazareth. This isn't just a question of like, hey, are you really sure this is him? As far as Nathanael's concerned, nothing good can come from Nazareth. And there are some questions that are questions. And as I've learned, there are some questions that are not questions at all. They're just statements, right? Can anything good come from Nazareth? It's not a sincere question, is it? It's not a genuine inquiry as to whether there is possibly any good. It's just dismissive altogether. Because Nathanael's view seems to be that Nazareth is void of all good. But at Philip's invitation, He comes to find out whether this man is any good or not. And Jesus sees Nathanael coming and says, he is an Israelite in whom there is no deceit. And Nathanael wants to know the source of that information. How do you know me? Nathanael asked. Jesus answered, I saw you while you were still under the fig tree before Philip called you. Then Nathanael declared, Rabbi, you are the Son of God, you are the King of Israel. That seems like the most dramatically quick turnaround ever. On a very limited interaction. Maybe it's me. He started from this position of, there's nothing good that could possibly come from Nazareth. Jesus has gone, here's an Israelite in whom there's no deceit. How do you know that? I saw you under a fig tree. Oh, you must be the Son of God, the King of Israel. It's an incredible turnaround. He's almost mocked Philip when he shows up saying, there's one. We found him. The one who Moses and the law and the prophets spoke of. And now he's there declaring him as the Son of God. Nathanael came to find out about Jesus. But the only thing they spoke about was Nathanael. And that caused him to declare the lordship of Jesus. Nathanael came to find out about Jesus. He was coming to see if anything good could come from Nazareth. And the sum of their conversation is about Nathanael. Jesus doesn't say anything about himself up until that point. And I want to talk to you this morning about the one who talks to you about you. The one who knows you and speaks to you about you. Because it's not the only time. If you've been here a while, you'll know I like the story in John 4 of the woman at the well. But there's this story takes place. Woman sitting at a well, drawing water. Jesus says, can you give me a drink? She says, what are you doing asking me for a drink? They have this conversation. He offers her living water eventually. And she says, give me some of that. I want some of that living water. And Jesus' response is, go and get your husband. Well, I don't have a husband. No, you're right. You don't have a husband. You've been through 5. And you're on man number 6 that you're not married to. Bit flustered about all this interaction that's gone on and what's happening and whatever else. But here's what she says. She's had this encounter. They've talked about worship. Jesus has offered her living water. He's told her he is the Messiah in the interaction. She goes in John 4 and verse 29 and says, come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Messiah? That's what she wants to tell people about. She's not only amazed that Jesus told her, she thinks other people should be amazed that he told her about her. She's not only amazed that he spoke to her about her. She thinks this is so wonderful, other people should see. It's incredible. And I'm asked myself this question, why? Why? Why does she think? Because I can understand that there are moments where, wow, they know me really well. But my instant reaction isn't, let me go and tell everybody that they know me really well. I'm going to suggest to you that we live in a world of pretense. And I'm going to tell you it's not a new thing. Matthew 6 and verse 1, Jesus says, be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. There's this understanding, we do an awful lot of things to show other people who we want them to think we are. Right? I behave in certain ways at certain times in order that I am appropriately behaving for the context that I find myself in. Deep in the, in order that I show myself appropriately in that context. And who I am sometimes is not who I am all of the time. And the reality is that I intentionally at times put on behaviors in order that you might see me in a certain way. That's the issue of Matthew 6, right? Don't practice your righteousness out there in public so everybody sees you and thinks you're wonderfully righteous. That's not what this is about. But it is the reality of human nature and it's what we do. And it might be best expressed in this way. When we want to pay somebody a compliment about their friendship, we say things like, I can just be myself around them. Right? I can just be myself around them. They just put you, you can just be you. And it's a compliment we pay to people. It's a thing we say about people as a act of generosity on our part to say they're wonderful people. But what does it say about everything else? And perhaps equally, it's demonstrated in the constant scandals we see. I went on the BBC News website this morning. I didn't scroll, I didn't go looking. But I think I found five stories on the front page of the BBC website that were about people who didn't behave up to our expectations of them. They were about scandal. They were about people not being all that we thought they were or doing things that we thought were inappropriate for who they are. The challenge of the pretense that we live in is that because our identity is shaped out there by everybody else, we get to a time where we don't even know ourselves. And that's probably more obvious in today's society than ever. But I don't think it's a new issue. As much as now people have different views about gender and sexuality and how they identify in those things, people have been having midlife crisis for an awful lot of time. People get to a point in life where they suddenly don't know who they are. So I've been that busy becoming what everybody else thinks I am that I'm suddenly left with this question of who am I? And even when you know who you are, you have this miserable job of trying to communicate that to other people. I don't know if you've ever been in this setting where you met a new group of people and somebody was leading that new group of people and they went, okay, we're all going to introduce ourselves. Tell us something interesting about you. My heart sinks. My heart sinks. What do you say? I've been alive for 28 years. I've lived a good bit of life. I've seen a bit of stuff, but like, you ask me something interesting about myself and I am suddenly at a loss as to how to find the words to express something interesting about myself. I've got a dog. And then there are some people who want to tell you too much about themselves. And suddenly you're left with this absolute oversharer telling you everything they've ever done and all they ever knew and everything they've ever experienced, and you want them just to be quiet and leave you alone. But there's this... And people only ever know what I'm willing to share with them. People only ever know what I'm willing to share with them. But Nathaniel, who I think is the first disciple to declare the sonship of Jesus Christ, sees Christ's glory in this moment where he recognizes Christ knows him. Because suddenly, the pretense doesn't matter anymore. And what I tell you about me is not even important. I love Psalm 139. Let me read a few verses to you. Verse 1 says, "You've searched me, Lord, and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all of my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you, Lord, know it completely." Hebrews 4 and verse 13 says, "Nothing in all creation is hidden from God's sight. Everything is uncovered and laid bare before the eyes of him to whom we must give an account." And I understand this morning that me telling you God knows you is not great revelation. I understand that for many of you, you've grown up with the understanding he's got the hairs on your head numbered. And that's just the deal. But I wonder, in beholding his glory, if you stop to think about that for a moment, what might change? Because if he knows me, I've got nothing about myself to explain to him. And the most often I find myself explaining myself, it's a lot of myself in there, is when he's saying something that I don't really like. See, there's this excuse I've learnt. Because people only know of me what I tell them, I say things like, "But you don't understand." you don't understand. And then go on to provide an explanation that accompanies their lack of understanding about me, my circumstances, and why the thing they're saying to me is not applicable to me or appropriate for me. Maybe it's just me, but that's a phrase I find myself using. I find myself explaining to people about myself in order to not do the things they're asking me to do at times. Because I think if they had a better understanding of me, they might not ask me to do the things they're asking me to do. And if they knew me better, then it would frame their expectations more reasonably. And that would be something that I could then manage. Suddenly none of that's applicable to him. Because I can tell him you don't understand, but it's not true. He knows me. He knows my movements, my actions, the things of my heart, my heritage, And I'm busy explaining to him why I can't do the thing that he's told me I'm meant to do, as if somehow he's suddenly unreasonable. And if he only knew me better, then he might change his mind or expectations about these things. What nonsense. What nonsense. If there's one who knows me better than myself, and he speaks to me about me, all of my excuses are worthless at that point. All of my justifications are rubbish. And let me say this. It is my expectation that God is going to speak to you more about you than anybody else. We are Pentecostals here. I believe God speaks through the prophetic. I believe he uses people to speak into other people's lives. But let me be crystal clear. His purpose in your life is to transform you. And if his purpose in your life is to transform you, then he's going to speak to you more about you than anybody else. And I've said this thing over and over again, and I'll keep saying it, and you might get sick of it, but I'm hoping it takes root at some point and makes a difference. The reality is, any behavior I justify to myself is probably sin. Because if I'm explaining to me and my conscience why something is okay that my conscience has told me is not okay, I'm probably having a fight with God about sin in my life. And actually, the justifications I have are worthless because he knows me. And he knows the circumstances I found myself in. And he knows what went on. And he knows what they said. And he knows what they did. And he knows the past hurt I've worked through. But he still expects better of me. But there's this other incredible thing, I think. He's got a more accurate view of me than me. Because I live in a world of pretense, because I'm inconsistent in some of my ways, because I'm not always what I am sometimes. very easy for me to get a warped view of me. So James says this thing, don't just be hearers of the word, and deceive yourselves. I have the capacity in myself to lie to me about me. I have the ability in myself to tell myself I am something I am not. I am able to convince myself that me, as an individual, is different than the reality of me. I think it's one of the scariest prospects in the world. Forgive me for saying it like this. I'm reasonably comfortable lying to other people about me. I'm far less comfortable if I'm lying to myself about myself and I don't know it. I don't mind you thinking I'm utterly incredible. Oh, he's wonderful, that Josh. I'm all right with that. It's not the truth, but I'm okay with it. I am less okay when I don't recognize me as me. And the beautiful thing about Jesus is he knows me. And his commitment is to speak truth into my life. And if I'm telling him I'm something that he says I'm not, let's just be clear. I'm not the one who's right in that situation. And if I'm telling him I'm something that he's challenging me about, see, maybe it's me. I don't know, but it's helpful if it's just personal confession. Hey, there's times where I feel like God's challenging me on some stuff. And what I want to do is tell him everything I am. But Lord, I'm so loving to those people. Honestly, I've been good to them. And, you know, I didn't shout at that person who cut me off on the road. And I didn't do... And suddenly I'm going through this list of things that makes me better than what I think he's saying to me. He knows you. And he has an accurate view of that. He's not ill-informed in your view. See, I don't know exactly, and maybe it's me again. How do you know me? Is the question Nathaniel asks. And the response Jesus says is, I saw you under the fig tree before Philip called you. My response is, great. What about that is significant? You saw me under a fig tree. And I don't have great revelation about that. There's nothing more to say about it. But I wonder, in an almost meaningless phrase, what God could say to you that would demonstrate his intimate knowledge of you. I saw you under a fig tree. We've no idea what was happening under the fig tree. We've no idea what was going on. But it's significant enough that suddenly Nathanael has gone from nothing good comes from Nazareth to you are the Son of God, the King of Israel. See, I don't think it's... I don't think it's incredible that a Samaritan woman meets somebody who knows she's had five husbands. I don't know. Maybe I'm being fairly judgmental in that. But in a significantly less populated world than we live in now, encountering somebody in your village who knows you're living with man number six. I mean, whilst the Neighbourhood Watch didn't exist, I assume nosy people still did. So, you'd assume there was something about that that wasn't necessarily... But it's significant enough for her. And the reality is, if I'm committed to transformation and to being changed from glory to glory, I need a God who knows me. Because otherwise he's going to be trying to change things in me that may not be relevant for me. And I don't know if you've ever met important people. But isn't it incredible? With all that Jesus might have said in that scenario, with all that he might have offered in a situation to a man who comes questioning who he is, with all of the wisdom that he had to share, with all of the words he had for planet Earth, what he does is goes, I know you, Nathanael. Because there are some people who, filled with their self-importance, are very good at talking about themselves. But I think one of the most glorious aspects of Christ is revealed in his relationship with me. Not generic. Not, yeah, we'll put him through the program too. But actually committed to personally knowing me. Working out his purpose in my life through me. Using me for his glory and good. which all starts with this foundational piece of knowing me. He knows me. He knows when I get up and when I lie down. My comings and goings. He perceives my thoughts from afar. Words that I have spoken, things that I have done, he's fully aware of it all. And the reality is, some of us aren't fully aware of ourselves. And some people spend lots of money trying to find out what's going on inside of them. To work out why they feel the way they do and why they think the way they do. But I know the one who knows me. And he's committed to speak to me about me. And to tell me about me. And to show me sometimes. I wonder if it's worth beholding that for a while. Not just taking it for granted as a truth we know as Christians. Because it staggered the people who encountered him, that he knew them. And I wonder if I need, in beholding that, to accept I've got no fight. That if he speaks, I haven't got an excuse. That if he challenges something in my life, I've got nowhere to go with it. Because it's not that he doesn't know or he doesn't understand. There you go. That's week one, though. Should we stand together and worship?